If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You are a woman in recovery. I'm curious if it became worse when you were in the modeling industry because of all the pressure to look a certain way and be thin. What was that pressure like?
You know, I always joke like caffeine, sugar, and cigarettes were a model's life.
When you were talking about your drinking, were you a functional person that could drink all the time, or you were kind of out of it all the time?
That's such a good question. You should ask my friends that were around. I wanted to escape the feelings that I was feeling. And I think the illusion of everybody who is really struggling is that one day I'll be able to figure this out. And I just couldn't. And so then on August 5th of 2008 is my last drink or drug.
How did you get from the point of having a lot of setbacks in your life to knowing that you could have a comeback? Can you talk about Silver Bell Global?
I became a life coach, which I thought was so lame. Now we're in our 12th year. The mission now is to really bring light. The behavioral health industry is a little antiquated in its approach and the methodologies. Some work for some people, but on a mass scale, I don't think, you know, treatment is working at the status quo. We do a lot of coaching and intervening and supporting so people don't have to bottom out, so people don't have to go away to treatment.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Well, today we're joined by Natasha Silverbell, the founder and CEO of Silverbell Global, an organization dedicated to helping individuals and families navigate addiction recovery and mental health challenges. Natasha's work is deeply personal. Her own journey through addiction and recovery has shaped her compassionate, holistic approach to healing. Through Silver Bell Global, she offers tailored recovery plans, life coaching, and advocacy, helping her clients address the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of recovery. Natasha is also a powerful advocate for breaking the stigma around addiction, showing that recovery is not only possible, but can lead to profound personal transformation. We are excited to have her here to share her story today, her insights into sustainable recovery, and the work she's doing to help people rebuild their lives and thrive. Please welcome Natasha Silverbell. Natasha Silverbell, thank you so much for joining us. You just were telling me you're in Montana, but you are a Florida resident. Tell me what goes on in Montana. I've always wanted to go there.
A lot of peace and tranquility, and I actually get to breathe and get grounded. I was like picking rocks in the field with my dad, and we were giving all these analogies about having the right tools to lift the right kind of rocks out of your life. It was really kind of fun.
All right. So I wanted to get right into this. You are a woman in recovery. You are on a life's mission, so to speak, to help people. I love that about you. I think that's great. But I want to start at the beginning, how you got into this. Will you tell me a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I was raised in Montana, although via Michigan. I ended up getting into beauty pageants. I was Miss Michigan USA when I was 19. It catapulted me onto a national stage, and I wasn't really ready. I don't think anybody's ready at 19 to be on a national stage, and modeling contracts came in, and I ended up with Ford Models in New York City, which was great. It's just that I had a Midwest farm girl mentality. So you know, like a quintessential cliche, bright lights, big city. I loved it. I'm not going to say I didn't want that, you know, and it was fun. And, you know, like a thief in the night, drugs and alcohol came and took me away. And I ended up stumbling for quite some time until I became pregnant with my first child at 26.
Wow. So can you just talk a little bit about how that came into your life? Because it seems like things were going really well with it. Peer pressure, did it just start simply and it didn't really affect your life? And then it got to a point that you couldn't function? Like, just explain that a little bit.
It does. It starts really slowly. I grew up also with an undiagnosed learning disability, and that part of me challenges even saying that, but I own it because I think a lot gets overdiagnosed today. We can get into that later. But for me, I have a phonetic problem pronouncing vowels. Like to this day, I have a handicap in my brain. Huh. And the common language now is neurodivergence, right? So there's different ends of the spectrum. And for me, I take a really long time to sound out a word. And so in school, when I was trying to keep up with my peers, that just wasn't happening for me. I was feeling really less than and was stumbling a lot. And so when drugs and alcohol were around and you experiment as a teenager, that's normal. It was a relief for me, and thus began my relationship with substances.
Right. I'm curious if it became worse when you were in the modeling industry because of, you know, all the pressure to look a certain way and be thin. And, you know, I don't know, what was that pressure like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thinner the models, this is the mid-90s to late 90s, the more you got booked. And so I would look at the bigger models and be like, well, I'll just be thin. And so restricting, certainly eating disorder, withholding food and through stimulants made it a lot easier, and cigarettes. And, you know, I always joke like caffeine, sugar, and cigarettes were a model's life.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to run a nightclub in Vegas and New York, and, you know, the models would all come in. That was part of what the promoters would bring in. And these girls were just the most gorgeous girls, but they looked pretty unhappy. They smoked and they, you know, drank, and that was kind of it. There was like no food ever. We weren't allowed to actually bring food to the table, which was a little odd, but, I get it. I witnessed all of that. Talk to me about, was there a rock bottom? Did something happen in your life that you knew that drugs and alcohol was affecting your life that you could not function properly?
I think that pre-contemplation stage for me began quietly in the back of my mind at like 22, 23, 24, where I was contemplating like, well, I shouldn't drink as much tonight, or I shouldn't use cocaine tonight, or I shouldn't do ecstasy tonight, or I shouldn't do the extreme. And I would always find myself doing it, not putting the dots together. I had no recovery sense in me at all, but I would have this game with myself, you know, and I got to a point where I stopped hard drugs. I was able to put that down, but alcohol then became my conduit until I became pregnant. And that was the first time I was able to put it all down for something outside of myself, my son. And my journey didn't end there with substances. It just began an awakening.
So, and I'm curious, with when you were talking about your drinking, were you a functional person that could drink all the time, or you were kind of out of it all the time?
That's such a good question. You should ask my friends that were around. I was definitely somebody who was seeking. I was on a mission every night. I was out like five nights a week, you know, going clubbing, friends, you know, south of France, you know, St. Bart's, the whole scene. Like I was definitely doing that, and birds of a feather. So I didn't think there was anything wrong with my party girl lifestyle. That's just what you did. I didn't have, even though I was raised in a different environment, I wasn't surrounding myself with people that were not partying. So I actually don't know.
Right. So at this point now in your life, how long have you been sober?
So this August 5th will be 16 years consistently, but I began my recovery journey. I had 4 years and then I relapsed for 6 months, and I'm happy to walk through that. So about 20 years in the recovery process.
Okay. So tell us what happened there.
So I got pregnant with my son and I was able to stop at 26 for my unborn child. And I was so grateful I had a healthy baby boy. And 2 months after giving birth, I was like, well, my body image, my vanity, my body dysmorphia really kicked in. And you touched on that before. And that's where, because I'd been restricting food since I was 19. Mm-hmm. And my body, when I got pregnant, was like, what's this food? I wasn't restricting pregnant. I gained 100 pounds. I was like 208 pounds when I got gave birth.
Right.
And so after I gave birth, I was nursing and trying to keep that all like perfect, like as if there is some perfect. And my body image was really challenging me. I was like, this weight is not acceptable. Like, this is not okay. And so I started drinking and using drugs again. And I hadn't gained real sobriety because I didn't know what it was then. But it really started when my son was 13 months old and I was in a blackout with him. And he knows this, so I'm not disclosing anything that he's not fully aware of. I call him my little savior. And I marched into my therapist's office and said to the father of my children, I said, if you would, take better care of me or treat me better, I would be okay. And I wouldn't have to drink and use so much. And my therapist turns to me very wisely and says, I think it's time you went to a 12-step program. Hmm. And it was like a huge relief for me. So that marked my beginning into my journey, but I was ready to hear it then. Mm-hmm. And I went into a 12-step program. I was, by God's grace, I had 2 more children in recovery. And I was sober for almost 4 years. And then that illusion that I'm going to manage my drinking and using safely. And the truth is, it was my weight. It was my body image that was plaguing me more than anything else. It was always the motivator to want the stimulants.
And so so it became an addiction to stimulants, not necessarily drugs and alcohol, because you were dealing with something in your head per se.
Yeah, it is always in your head. Like, that's, you know, I come from my drinking, but stayed for my thinking kind of mentality. And so for me, I wanted to escape the feelings of my body. I wanted to escape the feelings that I was feeling. And so I thought, well, I've got it now. And I think the illusion of everybody who is really struggling is that one day I'll be able to figure this out. One day I'll be able to manage my drinking and using safely. And I just couldn't. And so then on August 5th of 2008 is my last drink or drug.
Wow. Okay. Congratulations. I know you've been open about going through somewhat of a difficult divorce. I mean, as everyone does when they get divorced. But how did that affect you in your sobriety?
Wow. What a good question. I've been sober a minute, and I was 2.5 years sober before I attempted trying to get divorced. And I think having a solid foundation underneath you, I had a sober circle. I had people who were in my corner. And I was able to legally get divorced within 6 months, actually. So it was tumultuous after the fact, after I was divorced. But the process was, I kind of just laid my sword down and just said, I just want to take care of the kids and walked.
Right. Wow. That's very courageous of you. And because I think it's really important. How did you get from the point of having a lot of setbacks in your life to knowing that you could have a comeback? You know what I mean? Like the point where you're like, let me start this business. Let me move forward. Let me not deal with my divorce. What was that moment for you?
Such a good question. I would say the moment that there was moments, plural, that created that moment of awareness that I should go for something. And it was the people I surrounded myself with, strong, healthy women in my life that weren't drinking and using drugs. Simple fact, but hard to come by in Manhattan sometimes when that's been your social circle. And not that I don't love to be friends with love to go out with friends that like to drink or, you know, have a good time, but I value their relationship in a different way now. So I surrounded myself with people who believed in me. And I think that was the biggest indicator. And also the man I'm about to marry, you know, he was the one who said, you know, you're really good at helping people. He would watch me counsel and work with people. And he was like, you really should do more with that. And I didn't know what that meant. And I don't think he did either. But the idea that somebody really believes in you and says, go for it, you know, is pretty empowering and makes you wake up to that you have more to offer than just Not that being sober is a bad thing, but like being sober is just the foundation. It's kind of like the petri dish for more.
Right. So can you talk about Silver Bell Global? Was this the first, I mean, is that what you came up with and that's what you have now? Or did it start in little increments slowly?
It really started slowly. I became a life coach, which I thought was so lame. It was for losers, for people who didn't figure out. I really judged myself. And I had clinicians in AA and in 12-step rooms in Manhattan that I was friends with, and judges and lawyers. And they're like, no, get out of your own way. I had three small kids. You know, like I'd gotten back into NYU, but doing studies, being present mom with them, you know, being a mom is a full-time job. And so I put school down and chose to go into coaching because it was easy. I could do the courses online and I could phone in. And so I started just coaching one client at a time. And I started with a family lawyer. And he said, you know, this mom's having a really hard time staying sober. She'll lose custody of her kids. Can you go just work with her? And I started just like that. And one client at a time, being present in the moment with them, and they got better. And with me and a team, I'm not the only person, but that's how the company grew.
Mm-hmm. Will you talk about what the mission of Silver Bell Global is and what the core values, that kind of thing?
I would say the mission now, we're in our 12th year, and the mission now is to really bring light. And again, thank you so much for having me on, because your voice is really important for enlightening people. You cross a lot of worlds, and I think it's so important people to hear. Like, the behavioral health industry is a little antiquated in its approach and the methodologies. Some work for some people, but on a mass scale, I don't think, you know, treatment is working at the status quo. You know, mm-hmm. There's good aspects to cognitive behavioral therapy, and our coaches are trained in dialectical behavioral therapy, which is a skill set for deactivating and using your wise mind and having an evolved perspective. And these are all great modalities, but how and when you implement them is kind of what our company does. In real time, we're trying to change the conversation in where the behavioral health industry is by mm-hmm. highlighting different authors, leaders, panelists. You know, we had Sir Anthony Sheldon, who's an educational guru over in the UK. He's written over 50 books, and we talked about his progressive and mindful approach to education. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Misunderstood listeners, this episode is brought to you by Lola V. Yes, the award-winning hair care line founded by none other than Jennifer Aniston herself. With the holiday season upon us, it's the perfect time to embrace the joy of giving. And let's be honest, what could be better than the gift of gorgeous, healthy hair? Jen created Lola V because she, like so many of us, was tired of choosing between hair care products that actually worked and ones that were good for us. So she set out to create the ultimate clean, plant-powered hair care line. Whether your hair is curly, straight, fine, or thick, Lola V has something for everyone. The secret sauce? Their B Pro 3 Bond technology, derived from chia seeds. It's clinically proven to repair, protect, and prevent signs of damage and aging in your hair. It doesn't just mask the problem, it combats dry and breakage at the source, giving you visibly stronger, healthier hair. Now, let me tell you about my experience. I've been using the Ultimate Care Kit, and it's been a game changer for my hair. The restorative shampoo and conditioner made my hair feel softer and healthier after just one wash. And the glossing detangler, wow, it is my go-to for battling frizz, protecting my hair from heat styling, and adding that salon-worthy shine. If you're looking for the perfect gift this season, definitely check out that Ultimate Care Gift. This holiday season, unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at lolav.com. As a listener of this show, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use the code Rachel15 at checkout. That's LOLAVIE.com with promo code Rachel15. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Something that you guys do, you call yourselves a concierge crisis management company. What does that mean?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of people don't pick up the phone or realize there's a problem until the roof is on fire. And mm-hmm. that's why we use that word crisis, because typically people are reaching out to us in a crisis. However, it's a little bit old now because I think US consumers, even though we're a global company, US and the UK are really advanced consumers. They know that they can do something before the fire happens. And so we do a lot of coaching and intervening and supporting so people don't have to bottom out, so people don't have to go away to treatment. What if you could get in there and do a little bit of preventative measures in order to keep people in their family or work or school?
So, and are people usually coming to you? Is it parents? Is it people reaching out? Is it at the point where they've hit rock bottom? I mean, I know you're saying that they can start a little earlier, but is it because a therapist hasn't worked? I mean, how are you finding these clients?
That's actually a really good point. People have tried everything else. We are known as like the last stop on the bus route. We handle the really complex cases where 15, 20 inpatient experiences haven't yielded the return that's needed, but they were part of their process. So when they get to us, we can say, okay, what did you take from treatment? Because treatment can be good. And what didn't work. And then we want to implement what's working and what's not working. But yes, I'm getting a lot of parents calling me, word of mouth, therapists, doctors, people who are a little bit more savvy on finding a different approach.
Do you think it's important for that client themselves to be ready? Because, you know, if a parent calls, they're not necessarily ready, right?
No, it's such a valid question. And I'll start with a statistic that still the number one kill in our nation for people 50 and under is accidental overdose. And that's a stat that's climbing every year. And so, yes, willingness is important, but we can also help create willingness by working with the identified parents, the primary parents who are calling and or loved ones, the stakeholders. Sometimes it's a private wealth manager, a lawyer, a best friend. And we're working with them to help create coaching boundaries. Like, I can help teenagers get better by just working with the parents. You know what I'm saying?
Like, of course.
There's clever ways that we can support that initial phone call, whoever it is that's reaching out, to say, okay, where are you? What have you tried? Let's try this. And then at the right time, we can get that identified patient, I hate that phrase, but I'm using it, into the treatment of that's going to be effective, which typically is living life on life's terms outside of four walls, right? That's right. Stabilization. That's a beginning. So how do we help them achieve their goals?
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
What are your thoughts on, you know, I guess insurances these days and people going to treatment centers? I feel like, you know, especially during COVID, you heard about so many people that were having such mental health crises or, a substance abuse issues, and they just didn't have the money to go to rehab. So has a lot of that been solved? Like, what do people do if they don't have the money or the resources to help them?
That's where foundations and philanthropic. We started a foundation during COVID called In Service Foundation, where we do this modality outside of inpatient, but we'll also sponsor detoxes, to your point, and get people going and help them create that continuity that they need. Because most insurances will, you can go into an ER, you can go into, you know, a detox or of some kind, but to your point, staying in the treatment, that's the tricky part. And that's where hopefully the motivation of, well, if my insurance isn't going to cover this, I better take this serious, or I better find what resources I can.
Right. And to get back to what you were just saying, you know, I think it's really important that people do realize that there is so much information and wealth in how you learn to talk to someone with the addiction problem or with the mental health issue. And I can't speak for everyone, but I know that being heard is what is lacking in a lot of their, in that person's life. But the way that you talk to them, you know, is so important, because they don't feel heard for whatever reason, that they don't want to, they don't, you know. And I just think that that has become such a thing that people forget. It's all about like helping the person, forcing them to do something because you think you know better, but that sometimes pushes the person away. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my goodness, you're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, that's my first piece of advice to everyone, what you just said. Just listen. Yeah. I know that obviously if they're completely intoxicated, you know, there's a limit to how much time you should give to that. But if somebody comes to you sober and is like really trying to be honest, like that's a make or break moment in my book. Like,
yeah,
your day, reschedule your appointments, be present for that human being if it's someone really important to you. And if even if it's not, find a resource for them and say, I know this person really has time to listen.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm 49. And when I was 15, my father died of a cocaine overdose. And I don't normally share this, but I will with you because I know you understand that for me as a young child, for many years, they had said to me to write letters and to try and convince him that it would affect me. He wasn't ready to hear that, right? And then his father, my grandfather, would do all these extravagant things to try and force him. You know, he landed a helicopter on his property. He lived in Anchorage, Alaska, kidnapped him in the middle of the night and brought him to the Betty Ford Clinic, which is voluntary. So he refused to stay. But, you know, all these things just put him more and more into a recluse mode of not wanting to talk to anyone or listen to anyone. And they did a intervention that didn't work as well. And he just convinced people that he was fine until he wasn't fine. And those were the days, you know, this was in 1991 when he died. Now it's like, I would never do a drug because I'm nervous about my level of addiction because I'm in that family line, right? But also the fentanyl, like you were bringing up before, is so scary. You can try it just once and it's over, and it could be the wrong batch. And for me, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I'm just too scared for her because I know what it was like to lose a parent and be and have to live without a parent. And that's what scares me into not doing it. So I don't know why I just brought that up.
Thank you for sharing, because that's such a beautiful motivator, is like, what is the impact on the people around me? And that's a compassionate person who's, you know, the common denominator. Harvard did a study a long time ago wanting to know what that common denominator was between people in recovery from all socioeconomic, you know, racial backgrounds. And it was selfishness and self-centeredness, thinking about yourself. And so you're the opposite of that. You're thinking about your daughter. You're thinking about the impact you have on others. And that's the place to always be considering behavioral patterns.
Right. So I want to get into more of the mental health component, because obviously I think, well, it's not obvious, but I think that people, when they go down a path of being addicted to drugs and alcohol, it's because a lot of times they are repressing what's going on inside themselves. So can we just talk about the basics of what mental health and wellness means? Because I think there is a stigma, like we were talking about before a little bit, that people, when they hear the word mental health, mental issues, for me, I think of, like, you know, people living on the street in Manhattan that have real serious mental issues. But I think in some way, shape, or form, we all have felt depression, felt misunderstood, whatever it is. So can you explain what the basics are?
Sure. I think it's so selective for each individual. And, you know, one of the pieces people will ask me is like, how do I know if I have an issue with a behavior, whether it's shopping too much, spending money, you know, whatever it is, are you a harm to yourself or others with this behavior? And that's just a good baseline. I never will judge anyone's path or journey. I've been judged too much in my life. So I really like to lay that axe down, if you will, and not be an expert and be a human being with them. And so when you think about mental. You think about your brain and you think about, you know, maybe rumination and thoughts. Well, we all ruminate. We all have anxiety, to your point. Is how is that getting in the way of our day and being productive and or achieving whatever, I hate the word goals too, but, you know, understanding what makes us feel whole at night, that peace that comes in at night so that you can rest well. And so oftentimes there's a lot of, you know, sleep that's disturbed or behaviors that get in the way. And so I know I'm not giving a direct answer, but it's so subjective that when it becomes crippling and you're not going to work and you're not getting to your school classes, I think then there's something that really needs maybe professional attention. But until then, just finding a way to socialize, like I was saying, what helped me was being social with healthy.
Can we talk about what some of those behaviors would be? Like for me, I'm thinking people in toxic relationships, love addiction, sex addiction. Would eating disorders fall under that category too?
And then some. Yeah, there's always these underlying issues, right? And you could probably talk about it too. I'd love to hear your take, although I've, you know, obviously listened to you quite a bit. But one of the pieces is that I'm reaching outside of myself to someone or something else, substances, food, control, which is eating disorders is about the control. It's always often classified with OCD behavior, anxiety, because you're trying to control your world and you feel so out of control. And so sometimes like with relationships, right, you want to reach to that other person and that if they just do X, Y, and Z, then I'll be okay. And so I did a lot of other programs to help me with my codependency or my need to, if my ex is okay, then I'm okay, right? If Y is okay, then I'm okay. Well, that's nice and magical thinking, but if I'm always dependent on an outside source to dictate how I feel inside, I need to really pause and look at that.
Right. And just to hop back to your business for a second, Silver Bell Global. So people don't have to just come to you with a tangible addiction. It could be a parent or a person that's suffering from an eating disorder, from toxic relationships, again, love addiction, whatever it is. And you guys would help them find the resources and the understanding of how to help this person fix their issue, all sorts of things, correct?
And I love to do this. I like to think creatively and out of the box about how to do it in real time so that even if we're recommending a higher level of care, like inpatient, that they're still going to have to come out and find the lifestyle that's going to land so they don't end up back into treatment.
And it must be so difficult, but rewarding. But at the same time, I'm assuming a lot of these patients are over 18, right? And so it takes a lot to convince them that they need the help.
Not so much anymore, actually. I think our temperature in our society, especially the U.S., is leading the way. Most of the countries that we work with outside of the U.S. do look to modalities and ways. And so I think, you know, conversations like this, you know, TV shows that are talking about it more, artists that are singing about it more, are making it more real. Like, we can talk about this and not have to just be, you know, the crazy person that goes away to treatment. Like, let's talk about this. It's everyone has anxiety. Everyone has a depressive moment in their life, you know?
Yeah, I agree. What are some common misconceptions about mental health and addiction that you've encountered, and how would you address them?
Misconceptions are that, you know, if you have a substance abuse issue, you're a bum on Bowery Street. If you're a crazy person, you're talking to voices in your head and, you know, you have schizophrenia or something like that. But people that have schizophrenia actually are healthy people in society if they're properly medicated. And I think that there's, you know, there shouldn't be any judgment on that. They're definitely misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. What are some practical strategies or daily habits that individuals can incorporate into their lives to improve their mental health?
What a great question. I think having a healthy routine where you are laughing every day, where you are engaging with like-minded individuals every day, where you move your body. It can just be going for a walk. It can just be walking around your house. It can be gardening. Like I mentioned, I was picking rocks with my dad. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that in like 15 years. It felt so good just to get into the earth. And I think ways that you can get out into nature are very, very important.
Right. I agree. How do modern day stressors such as social media and fast-paced lifestyles impact mental health? And what can we do to mitigate that?
They do. And I think the research is showing more and more, especially with the younger generation. So my daughter, I have three children now, Sam, Ben, and Sarah, and she's 17. And we were just doing a little live podcast and our live Instagram, and we were talking about how she puts limitations around her social media. And she says, Mom, I don't follow people that make me feel uncomfortable in my own body. And I loved that she was really mindful about that. And so I think just being mindful, like I'm on Instagram, but I like to follow things that are nature, that feel good. And then I also limit myself. I know when I'm scrolling and I need to stop. Like, you know, that at least I do now. It took a lot of time, but I think just being more mindful about it, making sure that maybe you're with friends when you're doing it and you're not isolating alone.
Right. I do agree that being present can totally change your mood and, you know, put you back into yourself and the moment. I have a 12-year-old, like I brought up, and or maybe I didn't, but she is, I was watching your Instagram live and I was thinking about her, and she is obsessed, like all the kids in her class, with their social media. And that's where they get almost like their personalities from now. You know what I mean? And it is dangerous and it's scary. And also, I remember even when she was younger, trying to take away her iPad, she turned into like a pterodactyl. You know, they feel like they've grown up in this different mindset than we did, that it's normal to have that. And I remember hearing your daughter saying that when she was that age as well, it was very normal for her to have a phone and to interact with people that way. And so it is scary. And I think that it does take some time to kind of re-engage their brain to realize they don't have to be immersed in that and that they can be present, because it's not going to be so boring if they can participate in whatever's going on around them.
Exactly. And to that point, thanks for watching. I'll let my daughter know. She'll watch this too. But, you know, she's really worked hard. She's done a lot of work on herself to be more mindful and present. And I certainly don't sit and scroll in front of her. Like I do, I am mindful as a parent about my behavior, but she still had access to her phones and her friends, and they want to talk and on Snapchat and the whole thing. But just being really mindful, to your point. And she even made a comment to me last year. She's like, Mom, you don't know what it's like to grow up being a child of AI. Mm. And I think to that, you know.
And you talked a lot on your Instagram about body dysmorphia, which is something I do want to bring up again, because I think people don't talk about it enough. There is so much that goes on in social media. It's all smoke and mirrors. Everyone thinks everyone's living a beautiful life and that they look like a supermodel, you know, and that's just not true. And it's really scary, again, having a child growing up that is going to be so, and it's already so affected about whatever their image of beauty is. Can you talk about body dysmorphia a little bit?
Sure. I think as I did it with Keke Lingard, you know, she's a former Victoria's Secret model. She's very open about overcoming it, and hearing her voice as a model still in the industry talking about it's a feeling that comes up. So it can be an obsession with a body part. You know, there's definitely dysmorphia in that way, but I think commonality of it in most people identify with it is that I don't like the way I look. I don't like the way I feel. I, you know, body checks all the time. Listen, I always have my favorite pair of jeans. I'm not saying that's wrong. We got to have our favorite pair of jeans, but to the point where we're obsessing over it, where it's getting in the way of our lifestyle, and then we're choosing to not go out or just stay home and isolate. I think those are key indicators of something that should be checked.
Right. And how do you think people can kind of get in the mindset of fixing some of these issues before they start to seek help? Is there anything that you would suggest people can do?
Well, this conversation, send this podcast to them. Honestly, like, thank you for talking about this, because I think everybody thinks about how, not everybody, but most people, especially in America, we think about what we look like in the mirror and what other people are going to think of us. And that's nice to be well presented, but being mindful about it and talking to your friends about it, saying how much, and then just that camaraderie and that feeling of not being alone and how I feel. Like I still have an issue with the back of my arms. It's like a thing. And my daughter goes, Mom, you're crazy. Stop. It looks fine. You know? And
right. Like no one's looking at the back of your arms, but you.
But in my mind it is, you know, right. And I'm just aware of it. I'm honest about it, you know? And so how am I going to manage that? And so is it getting in the way?
It's funny that you say that, because, you know, you hear, also on Instagram, there are so many accounts that do so well with people that are very vulnerable. They're talking about the things they don't like about themselves. They're sharing things that they've been embarrassed about. And I think they do well because they're being vulnerable. And it's a universal thing that you're in your head thinking about all these things you don't like about yourself, or all the mistakes you made, or the stupid things you may have said on a first date. Whatever those issues are, everyone's been through it at some point. And I think that's really important to remember, that if you sit in silence, you're going to ruminate and obsess about whatever it is you're thinking about on your body and, you know, your mind, whatever. But if you talk about it, you'll realize that most people totally understand. And I think you'll probably forget as much about it.
You know? And then doing something with your friend, right? So, you know, doing something with my daughter, or if you're talking with a friend, okay, now let's go be of service and do something. Like, let's go volunteer our time, like going out and moving rocks. I wasn't thinking about my arms, you know, it's really good to get out of my own brain.
Totally. What advice would you have for people struggling with mental health issues, but are hesitant to seek professional help at this time?
That's a really powerful question. Well, the first step is really talking to someone that you feel safe with and trusted with and seeing what they say. I think that's the conduit. So a lot of people came to me in the beginning of my work because I was a coach and not a therapist. So you know, here I was thinking I had to be a therapist to be valid and help people. But really, I know my limitations. I know my lane. I don't overstep my boundaries. And so I can really identify when someone needs more support than just coaching. And I think that there's a gentler, softer way to waking up to the fact that maybe I might need a little bit more support than just coaching or just talking to a safe friend and having those trusted people in your life that are ethical.
Okay. Is there anything coming up with your business or your company? Are you guys doing any get-togethers? Do you guys do retreats? How does that work?
We sure do. That's something that's been really fun in the last 4 years. We do panel discussions organically. That just happened because I have relationships with pretty esteemed doctors and clinicians. And I'm like, wait, people need to hear what you're saying. People need to hear Sir Anthony, although he's super accomplished, bringing him into the mental health space. And Spears Magazine is an ultra high net worth magazine, like Forbes or Worth Magazine for the UK and Europe. And it's really respected. And so it's like, wait a second, his voice is now in that magazine. And so it's really awesome to have. Also, I had Cosmo Duff Gordon. He's a really great clinician in the UK. His voice is now in that magazine. So I think those are really important. You asked what our mission was, things that have been happening. So yeah, we started doing retreats, and actually, speaking of body dysmorphia, Lady Northampton is somebody who we teamed up with to do our first retreat. And our first retreat, this is 4 years ago, was at their estate with Lord Northampton, her husband. And we did a 3-day in a workshop seminar with body dysmorphia. And we had great speakers come in because she's given me permission and it's public knowledge. Her niece passed away from this when she was 12. And so she's on the board and she doesn't, we did some fundraising for them. But body dysmorphia is a human experience challenge that is plaguing our younger generation quite a bit.
Right. Anything else that I'm forgetting to ask you in particular that you want people to know?
Nothing's coming to mind. I'm really enjoying speaking with you so candidly. So thank you for your leads.
Where can people find out more about you, find out more about your business?
So we're Silverbell Global online and Instagram. We're starting to build up a little bit more content. Those who have followed us, we don't have a lot of followers yet, but we just want to keep the voice and the mission out there that there is a healthy solution and they don't have to be alone. We're on LinkedIn a lot, so we can find out what we're doing there.
Amazing. And I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see what comes out of this. And I just think it's such an important topic that everyone really needs to stop and listen to. So I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.